The topic of tonight's talk is karma. And it's funny, I went to a Bhikkhu Bodhi retreat. Marcia and Toby were there too this past weekend. And I knew it was going to be a lot of lecture, Buddhist lecture, because he's a Buddhist scholar. And at first I was like, oh, I hope I get through this weekend. And then I realized that I was loving it. I was loving all the lecture and the Buddhist information. So if I'm a bit academic and scholarly tonight, that's why, because I really enjoyed all the information that we went through. Now, karma in Sanskrit, it's karma, K-A-R-M-A. In Pali, it's kama, K-A-M-M-A. What was interesting is that the Buddha, even though he gets credited for the concept of karma, he was not the originator of karma. It was a pretty well-known concept in the Indian, in India back in that time. But what the Buddha did is he took the concept of karma and he expounded on it. And he really fleshed it out with a lot more details during the 45 years that he taught. And karma is like a basic doctrinal, really important concept in Buddhism. And what's interesting is a lot of Western teachers kind of avoid the topic of karma. And I can understand why, because it can get really sketchy. The last time I gave a talk on karma about 5 years ago, people got in a big argument about karma and rebirth. Were any of you here when that happened? I was kind of nervous. But back when I first started meditating about 32 years ago and going to Buddhist retreats, I never had heard much about karma before. It wasn't a commonplace topic. And today, in the past 10 years, karma has become, part of the mainstream language that we use. In fact, this morning there was we were just talking about this woman sold her house almost immediately, and we were both like, wow, that's really good house karma you have, And then you see bumper stickers. You know, those are my favorite, right? Bumper stickers, that's one is, my karma ran over your dogma. Right? And this is my favorite one. I hope karma slaps you in the face before I do. Anyhow, so kama comes from the root word kar in Pali. And kar means to do, to make, to act. Thus it means a deed or an action, right? So kama is actually an action. Kama is wholesome, wholesome or unwholesome action. So it can, or a neutral action. So it usually falls in one of those three categories. And kama vipaka is the result of that action. So you have two different things. You have the kama, the action, then you have the kama vipaka, which is the result or the fruit of the action. So as you know, you may know the story that the Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree and had his enlightenment. And there were many different stages of his enlightenment process during that night. And one of the stages was that he went through flashes of seeing all of his past lifetimes, right? And then he not only saw all his past lifetimes and how they led up to the lifetime that had him be able to be awaken this lifetime. So he saw all the causes and conditions and lifetimes that made it right for him to be able to awaken in this lifetime. And then he was able to see, because he developed this, the worldly eye, all the other human beings and how their karma and how all of their actions have led them to the conditions in which they're living their life. So that's where those are the circumstances around him teaching karma. And he saw all the accumulated karma born out of karma comes from one thing, ignorance. Not seeing things the way they are, that's how we end up creating karma, right? And this ignorance is born out of anger, confusion, fear, craving, desiring, right? So those poisons underlie the ignorance. And the ignorance is we don't see these poisons that are driving us, that are having us create or having us act out these certain actions that have these often unwholesome results. So an important part of this whole process, this is where it gets kind of dangerous, is rebirth, right? So the Buddha taught that it's your karma that gets reborn into future lifetimes, right? And it's a common Buddhist teaching. It says that after your death, you go to one of the six realms, and there are actually like 26, I believe, planes within all these six realms. And depending on how you lived your life, you'll go to a heavenly realm, or you'll go to maybe back to the earthly realm, or you can go to one of the lower realms. Hell realms. The ones that you don't want to go to. So this process of your karma being reborn into one of these realms, and it perpetuates, it keeps going, because as long as you keep having ignorance, you keep getting reborn and keep getting reborn and keep getting reborn. This is called samsara, right? And it's an ever-going, ongoing, never-ending process as long as you are driven by not seeing things clearly, driven by ignorance. Buddha, one of his famous quotes about samsara is he said that you've cried more tears, each of us have cried more tears during our successive lifetimes than all the water in the three great oceans combined. That's a lot of crying, I have to say. So how many here are squeamish about the concept of rebirth? A few people? Squeamish. I mean, you don't feel quite comfortable with the whole concept. Yeah, so several people are. And that's fine. And I think it's, you know, in the West, we're pretty much, our mindset, we're raised to be independent, and a lot of things about how, you know, our causes and conditions that come together have us perhaps not wanting to believe in something after, you know, death, or not sure about it, or wanting to stay neutral about it. And that's fine. You don't have to believe in rebirth in order to see the workings of karma, and to understand the workings of karma, and to really do your best, motivated by your understanding, to lead a more wholesome life. Now, I personally have chosen to not necessarily buy into all the realms and rebirth and all this. I'm not sure about it, but there's a part of me that buys into it, I have to say. Because, you know, sitting deep in meditation on retreats, I've seen flashes of past lifetimes. And just I've had a few past life regressions and things. So there's a part of me that's like, you know what, that's a good probability that this is maybe true. So anyhow. But the really important thing is that karma, or karma, however you want to say it, in the Buddhist tradition, refers to actions that are driven by intention. Intention, chaitana, is the most important driving force behind karma. So it's your intention that matters. It's your intention that makes your karma either wholesome or unwholesome. It's your motivation, the deliberateness. And it's the deliberateness or the intention of a deed done through either the body, the speech, or the mind. So these are the three areas that you want to mindfully be really aware of: the body, the speech, or the mind. And according to Buddhism, this is what these actions with the intention leads to your future karma, right? So I knew a man that I was a business associate with who was late to a business training we were leading. And he was late because a lady walked out in front of him and he accidentally ran her over and killed her. Bad day. So, you know, his negative karma, difficult karma, was that he had to deal with the consequences of having killed someone, you know, going to the police station, being let off of charges or whatever. But his primary karma was not hindered by that, according to Buddhism, because he did not have the intention to kill anyone. Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is one of the most famous and my favorite quote around karma that the Buddha said in the Anguttara Nikaya, the Book of Fives. He says, one should reflect often. I am the owner of my actions, heir to my actions, born of my actions, related through my actions, and have my actions as my arbitrator. Whatever I do, for good or for evil, to that will I fall heir. The other thing I like about Buddhism is there's no almighty God or, you know, some high power in the sky somewhere passing down dictates or punishments from our behavior. In its simplest forms, it means that the results or the vipaka or fruits of our actions taken, you know, it's like the cause and effect. Isn't there a law in physics, the law of cause and effect? And what is that law state? For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Sounds pretty similar, doesn't it? Right? So in Buddhism, the Noble Eightfold Path, for those of you who've studied the Noble Eightfold Path, that is the eight factors. It's a prescription the Buddha laid out. You want to awaken? You want to be free from suffering? Follow this prescription, the Noble Eightfold Path. And the very first factor in the Noble Eightfold Path is right view or wise view, samadhi. You have to have the right view in order to make any progress on this path. Because if you have a view that's obscured by ignorance or wrong understanding, then you're not going to be going forward on this path. And one of the primary principles of right view is that you need to understand and accept karma. So it's a primary teaching in the Noble Eightfold Path. When you understand karma and the laws of karma, then you'll take care of your actions. And you'll do what you can to purify your actions of body, speech, and mind. So the way that we purify our actions of body and speech is we practice the precepts and the ethical, moral practices of Buddhism. And the way we take care of our mind, guess what we do to take care of our mind, to purify it? Meditate! Right? Yeah. So monks, this is the Buddha again. These four types of karma have been directly realized, verified, and made known by me. Which four? There is karma that is dark with dark results that create injurious bodily, verbal, or mental acts. There is karma that is bright with bright results, non-injurious bodily, verbal, or mental acts. There is karma that is dark and bright with dark and bright results. There is karma that is neither dark nor bright with neither dark nor bright results, leading to the end of karma. So this neither dark nor bright is actually when you have cultivated the Noble Eightfold Path, the eight factors. So let's look at these, the bright, positive, good karma, the bright with bright results karma, is derived by wholesome actions, right? With wholesome intent, motivated with the intention of goodwill, generosity, and spiritual awareness. And the dark with dark results karma is, some people call it bad karma, negative results, is results of actions that arise from the three primary poisons, either greed, hatred, or delusion, or ignorance. So I was walking with Suzanne this morning, and she said, how do you even know that karma is existing or manifesting in this life? I thought, oh, that's a good question. And the way I look, if you can look back over your life, you can see how karma has played out in your life. Can you not? Can you see how your actions had particular results? For instance, if you did well in school and it was really important for you to excel academically, and then you decide to go get some higher education and get higher education degrees, perhaps a PhD or whatever, then what is the likelihood of you getting a higher paying job and being able to support yourself, right? So that you can see how those actions have specific results. If you have a fear of an irrational fear of losing money, it's much more common than you realize. And you obsess and dwell on not wanting to lose your money or lose your things. What are just a few words? What are some of the possible karmic results of what's showing up in your life right now?
Illness.
Robbery, yeah. Thievery, stinginess, homelessness,
accidents,
loss of jobs, is that what I heard? Mm-hmm. Might you be a hoarder? Mm-hmm. Right? Perhaps not very generous. Perhaps you don't trust people because you're afraid they're going to take something away from you, so you might be disconnected and living alone and feeling lonely and scared and all these other, you know, karmic results of you practicing, cultivating fear of losing money. Does that make any sense? So those are just a few small examples of how karma can show up in this lifetime. But the one thing that I love about karma is that it forces us to take responsibility for the conditions of our lives. It isn't God's fault, it isn't my father's fault, or, you know, someone else. It's like, oh, I made these choices. I created these conditions to a certain degree, mostly, right? So a Buddhist who is fully convinced of the law of karma relies on him or her own self for their own emancipation, for their own freedom, for their own success. And one relies on one's own willpower, and when they really understand karma, are looking to create the well-being for themselves and for others as well. Our past actions produce our present circumstances. We are the architects of our own fate. We create our own heaven and hell to the primary degree. We're responsible for our own happiness and our own misery. That's taking full responsibility, isn't it? And as you know, positive and negative karma not only affect the quality of your life today, but will also affect, according to the Buddha, the quality of one's rebirth, your next rebirth, whether you believe it or not, if it happens or not. So here's one thing I love is instant karma. Has anybody experienced instant karma?
Yes.
Instant karma? Like you think of somebody and then they call you, or you know, you need something and boom, it's there. That's really wild, instant karma. Love it. Unless it's negative. Don't like that, negative instant karma. Anyhow, this is Will Rogers. Remember Will Rogers, the cowboy and actor? His take on instant karma. He said, never slap a man who's chewing tobacco. And this is my favorite. Never kick a cow chip on a hot day. Ooh. You guys didn't like that one. So there are a lot of different kinds of karma, according to the Buddha. The Ditta Dhamma Vedaniya Karma is karma bearing fruit in this lifetime. The Upapaja Vedaniya Karma is karma bearing fruit in the very next lifetime. There's Apapariya Vedana Karma, which is a karma bearing fruit in future lifetimes after the next lifetime. And there's this one that I think is really interesting and important. It's called death proximate karma. Now, according to the Buddha, your state of mind at your death or right before your death is going to directly determine your next rebirth, or at least add to determining your next rebirth. So you're instructed, the reason why we're purifying our mind now while we're alive and doing well is so that we can have a happy state of mind, a peaceful state of mind while we're dying, not be beset by fear and regret and anger and all these things. We're purifying that now so that we can feel great fortune upon our death. We're supposed to, while we're dying, think of all the wonderful things we've done, all the beautiful people we've known, all the happy times we've had, so that when we die, we want to die with a positive state of mind so that we'll have a more positive rebirth. And that's why in a lot of Buddhist countries, people will, as their loved one is dying, they'll sit at their deathbed and they'll be telling them great stories about them, things that they appreciate about them. There'll be a good friend of mine just died in California that I was in a training with, and all of my other friends who live in California got together and they were chanting Buddhist chants at her bedside and telling her how much they love her and how beautiful a person she was. And, so yeah, that's a big thing to do in Buddhist practice. If you're fearful and you're having a rough time, then you're supposed to practice metta practice in your deathbed. So you start practicing the may I be happy, may I be well, whatever it is. May I be at peace, may I accept this, may I be free from fear or whatever. So what goes into subsequent lifetimes? Right, and what stays in this lifetime? I'm not really sure exactly, but you know, the really strong habitual tendencies that you have, for instance, if you're really stingy or you're really generous and you practice that regularly, it becomes part of your character. These habitual tendencies get passed on into future lifetimes, all right, in next rebirths. So you want to practice or make, you know, habitual tendencies of positive, wholesome things so that they'll get reborn. There are five terrible karmas, negative karmas, that will go into the future lifetimes at some point. You don't know when they'll come out. But these are the worst things you can possibly do, the worst karma you can create. And that's having killed one's mother or father, causing blood to flow from an enlightened being, causing disunity or disharmony in your sangha, harming your spiritual teacher, or killing an arahant. So those are the killing an arahant. An enlightened being, yeah. So those are the worst things you can possibly do. Lama Zopa, he says, one who criticizes, hurts, or belittles one's teacher from the heart will not achieve anything in this life. Even if one practices hard, one will not achieve anything. You better be nice to me. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I was going to say, it seemed like there was an institution that added a few things.
Perhaps. So you can get rid of accumulated bad karma, the one that's not too severe, not too habitual, by breaking through the veil of ignorance, seeing things clearly, so you quit adding more ignorance. You start acting more wholesomely so you can negate some of that negative karma, right? You can also negate negative karma by practicing mindfulness meditation, positive actions, like I said, meritorious deeds and charitable works, generosity and kindness. So the more you practice these, the more you negate negative karma that's accumulated. So interestingly enough, in Burma and Thailand, very few people actually meditate, you know, in these Buddhist countries. And a lot of them feel like they don't have the disposition to be able to sit down and meditate and focus. So what they do is they give all their money and do all these meritorious deeds for their Dhamma teachers and for their monasteries and Dhamma halls. Because they feel that if, you know, I can't meditate, but I can do meritorious deeds, so I'm going to accumulate good karma by doing all these meritorious deeds. And it's really widely accepted practice in these countries. And I look at, you know, if chaitana, intention, is an important part of our karma, then I question that intention, you know. I don't know. But I had a lady once tell me that I had really good karma because I was able to meditate and she wasn't. She was from Burma. And she said, I just can't sit still. I can't sit and meditate. So you have very good karma. I have bad karma. And I was sitting there thinking, hello, lady. Do you think this was easy for me to meditate? I didn't say this, but the first year of my meditation practice, I felt like I was chewing on nails. I hated it. I wanted to jump out of my skin. It wasn't good karma. It wasn't easy. I chose to deal with it, deal with whatever was arising. Maybe I did change my karma from that. I don't know, because it's much easier now. What's really also interesting is that even though karma is the strongest deciding factor of our present and future circumstances, it is not the only factor. So it's not the sole factor. There are 24 conditions that attribute to our reality. And a lot of different conditions have to come together in order to meet in a certain way at the right timing to create our situation. Bhikkhu Bodhi, when asked about karma this past weekend, he just said one sentence, causes and conditions all coming together at the right time. The other thing is that Buddha taught us that karma is one of the imponderables. He said, don't try and understand or try to figure out karma, because it's a topic that if you try to figure out in your head, it can drive you crazy. So don't try. Like questions like, why did the young person die and other people who are not so nice continue to live? Or I had a lady in my hometown, her 3 children and her son all died to different years, and she was left alone. So, you know, that's like, why was she? She's such a good person, too. She said, don't worry. Unless you can see all your past lives and every action you've ever taken, every choice you've ever taken, you're not going to understand karma. So don't even, you know, just accept that you see it working in your life. So we want to practice kindness, generosity. We want to meditate as much as possible. We want to go on retreats. We want to work towards liberation of setting ourselves free and creating a really beautiful life for ourselves by the choices we're making right now, today. Because those are the choices that matter. Each moment we make choices for a beautiful life, a positive life, or for one motivated by stress and strife. Thank you.